from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, good morning and welcome to Forum. I'm Thuy Vu, in today for Michael Krasny. In the wake of the ongoing controversy over the NSA secret surveillance programs, new information is coming out about what local police departments do with the data they collect from license plate readers on patrol cars. The Center for Investigative Reporting found that millions of these records are kept in local intelligence storage centers. One of those centers is funded by a Silicon Valley firm with ties to the Pentagon and the CIA. So is the data critical for fighting crime, or is it a violation of privacy? Joining us now to discuss the issues are Mike Senna, director of the Northern California Regional Intelligence Center, which stores some of that data, and Ollie Winston, who wrote the article on license plate readers for the Center for Investigative Reporting. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Thank you for the time on the show.
Ollie, how much information can these license plate readers capture, and how many plates in an 8-hour shift, for example?
The license plate readers that are currently available are far superior to the ones that were on the market a few years ago. They're capable of capturing about up to 3,000, 3,600 plates per hour. And they, you know, in a several-hour shift, they can store tens of thousands of plates. Of course, this is dependent on how many cars they drive by, but the plates are automatic. When a patrol car equipped with this technology drives by your vehicle, it automatically takes a shot of that license plate.
And besides the license plate, can you see anything else? Can you see, for example, who's inside the car?
The photograph that's taken of the car, depending on which model you're using and what procedure the police department has set up, you can actually get a full front picture of the car that the license plate belongs to. And occasionally, you will be able to see inside the windows, or you know, you'll be able to see anybody who's around that car and any surrounding environment around that particular image. But again, it always depends on the angle that the picture is taken and who's around there and what the context is.
So which Bay Area police departments are using this, and what do they do with this data?
There are 32 agencies in the Bay Area that use license plate reader technology. The Oakland Police Department, the San Francisco Police Department, Walnut Creek, CHP, San Leandro Police, I would say San Jose uses it as well. Most of the major metro police departments use this sort of technology, and it's very useful for law enforcement when it comes to certain types of crimes like auto theft, when you're tracking a high-profile suspect, when you're on the lookout for somebody involved in an Amber Alert that's used a certain vehicle. It's really useful, but at the same time, there are questions about how long this data can be retained. Some departments don't have any sort of retention policy whatsoever. They keep this data indefinitely. One of those departments is the Oakland Police Department. They retain this data in perpetuity. And that is one of the main issues that's come up about the use of license plate reader technology, is how long this data is retained and for what purposes is it being accessed.
Mike Senna, let me have you address that, because your organization, the Northern California Regional Intelligence Center, is one of the centers that stores this data. How long do you keep it for, and who do you give the information to outside of police departments? Do you, for example, give it to federal agencies?
Well, to go in kind of the rundown of the ALPR system, the network that we've been helping to develop, it's a conglomeration of storage of our own data, along with integrating the data from other agencies. And part of that also incorporates having the same privacy policies, civil rights, civil liberties protections. And for us, our policy is to store the data for a 12-month period to provide those investigative agencies the ability to make their cases, to develop the information they need for their investigations. And, those are all part of what we do to protect people's information. Now, as far as the access to the systems, the access to the information is limited to personnel that have a need to know and a right to know. And that right to know is based on being a law enforcement officer, a law enforcement agent, or, a person assigned to one of those public safety agencies. So they are the only ones that have the ability to access the data. the next step is that person having a need to know, a lawful purpose for looking for that data. And the data is, you know, as was mentioned earlier, is, you know, it's that picture of the vehicle. It's a picture of the license plate. It's the geospatial information as far as where that incident occurred. And those are the things that are captured and then run across a database looking for those stolen vehicles, those vehicles that are wanted in connection with investigations. And so as a law enforcement officer, you have to, one, be vetted to have access to the system. You have to agree to a privacy policy and to adhere to our privacy policy. And then you have to have that lawful purpose, that investigation that you're doing to look into the data set. But the data set doesn't say, you know, who the vehicle belongs to. It just gives them that information on, you know, where it was and what the license plate number is. And then the individuals, you know, they have to have that access to the other law enforcement databases from DMV for registered vehicles, which identify the name of the person and the address that it's registered to. And then further, you have to enter, you know, that DMV system again to do an inquiry on, you know, who the individual is. So it's a multi-step process, and it doesn't exactly identify who that vehicle belongs to. And restricting it from our purposes, right now our data collection and the information that we're integrating to share with other agencies is limited to those law enforcement license plate reader systems that are out there. We don't bring in license plate reader information from private companies that also have this type of technology out there. And we limit it to, because one reason is we're looking at those license plates that are out in public view, public streets, and those folks that have their private enterprise or industries for license plate readers from tow truck companies to other folks are, you know, oftentimes going on to private property or other things that the government is not on. And we restrict our the information that we're collecting from, you know, those public view locations.
Mike, despite the restrictions you just mentioned, as you can imagine, a number of civil libertarians are rather concerned about this. If you're a law-abiding citizen and you're just driving around, say you're making a trip to the grocery store, shouldn't you have some reasonable expectation that your privacy will be protected, that you're not, your image and your license plate aren't captured by one of these license plate recorders, and then your information stored in a data center somewhere for a year or even in perpetuity, depending on the agency? How do you respond to that?
Well, as far as the usefulness of the tool, we always have to balance the public safety with the privacy, civil rights, and civil liberties. And the unknown factors are we don't know who the individuals that are planning criminal activity or engaged in criminal activity are until, you know, we come up with those, you know, stronger investigative leads. So if we said, okay, we're just going to look for the bad guys' plates, only those that are stolen or known to be involved in criminal activity, then we lose the ability to retrace and potentially figure out patterns of activity and prevent those criminal acts. Everything from, you know, people involved in child abduction cases and kidnappings to violent crimes, murders, homicides, we lose the ability to have that as an investigative tool. And we also want to make sure that, yes, that privacy is one of the paramount things that we are protecting, protecting the Constitution. And the way we do that is to make sure that this data is not available to anyone but those who have a need and right to know, and that there's an audit log of every transaction, of every entry into the system, and that we enforce that to make sure that, you know, we don't have people fishing or doing expeditions for data that they do not need.
Well,
that's our goal as well.
The big question here, though, is does it make sense? Is it fair to capture information on everyone in the hopes of catching a few? And I guess it's sort of in the same vein as some of the questions that have been raised about what the NSA has been doing. Ali, what were some of the concerns that you found in your reporting on this for the Center for Investigative Reporting?
Well, again, I think you voiced some of them, but the question is how much data is being retained, how long is it being retained for, and for what purposes is it being retained? Last year, actually, there was a state senator who is now a Santa Clara County supervisor, Joe Simidian, who I believe he was alarmed at the use of license plate reader technology by private companies, which, again, is not the sort of law enforcement agency that we're talking about. And he had a bunch of – he sought to craft legislation that would have restricted the retention periods on this sort of data – to 60 days for private and public institutions, including law enforcement agencies. And the California Highway Patrol actually currently has a 60-day retention limit for LPR data that their agency collects. So there are law enforcement agencies out there that understand that this data is sensitive, that individual citizens who have not committed any sort of crime will be maybe upset that their information is being stored, and they do take steps to eliminate it after a certain time period. And that really is a major concern out there. Another concern is what sort of investigations this sort of license plate records are being used for. But that, again, is law enforcement. That's law enforcement's privilege. And another thing is that it's not just law enforcement agencies that collect this sort of information. The Metropolitan Transportation Committee, which runs the seven bridges in the Bay Area, mm-hmm. collect tens of millions of license plates through their own readers for toll violators. They've been doing this since 2005, and those plates are kept indefinitely. Huh. So it's not just law enforcement as well. It's growing into other fields of government.
We're talking about license plate readers on police patrol cars during this half hour and how that information is used by law enforcement. We're joined by Mike Senna, director of the Northern California Regional Intelligence Center, which stores some of that data, and Ollie Winston, who wrote the article on license plate readers for the Center for Investigative Reporting. And we'd like to hear from you and hear your thoughts and concerns, if you have any, about this technology. You can join us by giving us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. Tell me about the Silicon Valley and CIA connections to some of this technology as well, Ollie.
So the firm that won the contract to build out this database for NCRIC is called Palantir. And Palantir is a technology firm that crafts a lot of really high-powered data mining software for a number of clients, including the Pentagon, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and also for law enforcement as well. They received $2 million in seed funding from InQtel, which is a venture capital firm that the Central Intelligence Agency set up several years ago to fund projects that they believe would produce actionable technology or useful technology for the intelligence community down in Silicon Valley. And they put quite a bit of money around. Palantir was linked with the NSA's PRISM data mining program, I believe, at the beginning of the month when Edward Snowden's revelations came out, because they also have a data mining program that's called PRISM, but they've denied that it's the same database that's being used by the same software program that's being used by the intelligence agencies. They say it's name collision or something of the sort. But they have very extensive ties to the intelligence and defense communities, and they're also expanding their business model into law enforcement. They've set up a good amount of contracts with law enforcement in Southern California. I believe LAPD uses a Palantir system for their own information management systems.
So, Ali, what does this mean? Does this mean then that the Pentagon and the CIA have access to all these records and can readily, view them whenever they want?
I wouldn't say that. As Mr. Senna said earlier, federal law enforcement does have access to the NCRIC database. Actually, that's explicit in the documents that they've made public about this particular system. What it does mean is that you're seeing a kind of reconvergence of parts of Silicon Valley and the defense and intelligence community. And now, Silicon Valley has longstanding ties to the Pentagon, to the country's defense establishment. But now you're seeing the additional factor of law enforcement thrown into the mix. There are a lot of firms down there that are interested in branching out into the law enforcement market and helping to develop technology that will fight crime and mm-hmm. reduce recidivism and do a lot of other things in the criminal justice world. And that's really Palantir is kind of getting into that world with its data mining programs.
Mike, is Ali right? Is it more than just police who have access to these records?
Well, it's right now for us, it's just law enforcement. That's our restriction. And we don't, we are not connected to any federal agencies. Each Palantir instance, and Palantir is basically a technology vendor that provides analytical tool. There's many other companies out there. In fact, for many of the projects we've had, we've put them out to bid. And they were, of course, one of those companies that received the award based on the technology and its capabilities. As far as the, sharing it beyond, anyone within our area, it's right now, it's a state and local program and project, and it's had, great success in identifying those vehicles that we've been looking for, stolen vehicles, those under investigation. Whereas previously, we'd have to have somebody driving down the street and happen to basically stumble across the stolen vehicle or find the vehicle that had been abandoned. And just, kind of give you an idea of the number of contacts that we have. It's about one out of every 1,000 vehicles that are coming in contact with the system that have that alert. And in the last 12 months, we've had 10,000 hits related to stolen vehicles or vehicles under investigation. So it kind of gives you an idea of, that traffic and the ability to identify vehicles that are used for illegal activities that we would have never had before. Hmm. As far as this broad brand, integration with other federal entities, there just isn't that right now. And those federal entities have different responsibilities than we do as a state and local fusion center. And our responsibilities are to our state and local government, to the public of the state and our communities. And what we look for is basically related to criminal activity, which is not often or always the case for federal counterparts. They have different national security interests that they take care of outside of the United States. So there's just not a connection there.
Okay, we're hearing from quite a few of our listeners on this topic. A listener on our website writes, "I am a big supporter of privacy rights, but how can you have privacy rights when you're out in public on the public roads? Privacy happens behind closed doors and on private property." Let's also go to the phone lines now and hear from James in Vallejo. Good morning and welcome to Forum.
Good morning. Yes, I'm calling. I drove a camera car for an auto recovery company for over a year here in the Bay Area. And they capture license plates in shopping centers, parking lots, bingo halls, churches, private streets, apartment buildings, commercial parking lots, everywhere. There's really no privacy whatsoever. Anywhere you are, there's a camera car that has potential to capture your plate. And in fact, it was for an auto recovery company, a repossession company. And they also had a backdoor program on that system to where they were capturing all that data. And who knows what they're going to do with it. And there's no limits or liabilities or storage questions at all. They just capture it, and Lord knows what they're doing with it.
Mike, do you want to respond to that?
Definitely. From our program's perspective and our integration project, we don't accept any data other than that which comes from law enforcement. So there are companies and organizations that have agreements to collect data from those folks that are out there doing auto recovery. But we do not currently do any business with those folks because of our concerns about, where those cameras are at. With law enforcement, we know where their vehicles are at and where an officer needs to be. But with the cameras that are on tow trucks or other vehicles, we have no clue of where they may be. So we pretty much stick to those that are in public view on public property.
Okay. Let's go now to Steve in Livermore. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking the call.
My pleasure. What's your question or comment?
Yeah. Well, my comment is I work at one of the major license plate recognition vendors, and we actually supply the systems that CHP uses and also supply the systems that the gentleman on the phone earlier was talking about to not all but many of the car repossession agencies. And I could answer the question on what is done with that data. It's basically to help add the asset recovery field, so banks will find out if you're late on paying your loan for 3 or 4 months, be able to repossess these vehicles more efficiently. And then the data is provided to police free of charge. We have a system enabling that, and only the police, only a badged officer would be able to look at that information. And as far as the privacy concern, as it was illuminated before, we're big proponents of all the legislation out there today. One in particular that we're very, very, very fond of is the Driver Privacy Protection Act. And there was a tragic situation just here in California where somebody looked up DMV data and then one used that information to commit a heinous crime. So now, obviously, the only way you can match who the plate is, and you know, every law in every state says you have to publicly display your license plate, but the only way you can see whose plate that belongs to is if you have the need to know and right to know to access it, and those are people such as badged officers. So we're helping police put together the pieces to solve crimes, heinous crimes, stolen cars, Amber Alerts. There was a case in Maryland just a couple of months ago where a 15-year-old girl was abducted from New York and taken down to Maryland, and there was indication to think that she was being held up in an area down there, and one of our plate readers from one of our tow truck drivers in our network found her, and the police were able to, well, they got there to save her life, and she's able to put the pieces back together, but it was a, you know, heinous situation. But so there are many, many millions of reads only looked at in those cases, and those many thousands of cases then where people are being actually helped by this technology protecting communities.
Well, Steve, thanks for sharing the insights into how they've been valuable as crime-fighting tools. Ali, do the benefits then outweigh some of the privacy concerns here?
I think that's a conversation for the public to have. I think that's something that the state's public and the legislature should decide for themselves. I mean, I think there are uses for law enforcement. That's absolutely true. But at the same time, this is private. This is personal data that can be used to track your location and conceivably put together, you know, when you pair this with other law enforcement databases, it can be used to put together someone's habits, someone's associations, potentially somebody's, you know, political affiliations. If they, you know, happen to keep driving back and forth between one church and another, one meeting and another, you know, it's very useful for law enforcement. And the question is, where is the balancing act? What sort of restrictions does the public want to or not want to impose on the use of this data and how long it gets retained for? I think it's worth noting that the private companies that we just mentioned are allowed to retain this data indefinitely and also sell it. That's one of the things that Senator Smitian wanted to regulate in his bill last year that received such strong opposition from the peace officers associations and narcotics officers associations, district attorneys associations, and believe at least one firm that works in license plate reader technology, that it, you know, he didn't even advance it. He chose to kill the bill rather than have it go through a committee and be watered down, have it go through the legislative process and be watered down even further. So there is a genuine public debate to be had, and I think that that's one of the things we need to do regarding regional databases like the one that's up here in the Bay Area, or excuse me, not just the Bay Area. The range is from Monterey County all the way up to the Oregon border in Del Norte County. There are also similar databases in Los Angeles and in San Diego as well. So the question really is, do we want to be a society that engages in this sort of practice without checks and balances and without public input? And I think that one of the things that would be helpful for this process to bring some sort of transparency to it would be for the Fusion Center to post all of the memorandums of agreements it has with local law enforcement. I was only able to find 4 agreements that it had with police departments in the area that allowed data to be shared with Milpitas, Daly City, San Francisco, and San Leandro.
That's it, just
However,
4.
However, documents, there's 4, right. But more police departments than that, we confirmed that through a City of Piedmont document that police in Oakland, in Walnut Creek, and I believe the CHP as well, along with a couple other departments, had access to this database, but they did not turn over memorandum of agreement that they signed with the Fusion Center. So my question is, are these, you know, are they working with agreements, with written agreements governing the use of policy, or is there, you know, is this a sort of ad hoc relationship? Also, if there is a privacy policy that NCRIC has, posting that publicly where people can read it and analyze it would also be helpful.
Mike, do we need to have more openness here then? I'm surprised to hear that he could only find 4 written agreements when clearly many more police agencies use these license plate readers than that.
Well, we have written agreements with those agencies that are contributing their data for access to the system. It's each individual officer has to acknowledge and sign agreements with privacy policy. So it's based on their access as an individual officer within our Bay Area being vetted and verified by their employing agency. The other part of that was the question on the NCRIC privacy policy. If you go to ncric.org, ncric.org, right at the bottom of the page, there is a little part about legal and privacy. So if you go directly to that, it will pull up the privacy policy for the Fusion Center.
Okay. All right. I think we have enough time for one more call from, let's see here, John in Berkeley.
Good morning. Answer your question. It is an ad hoc relationship when it comes down to sharing information with local law enforcement. I'm speaking to a reporter who posts that very much. So I'm a former military intelligence analyst. I answer that to that effect. One thing I wanted to bring up as well is that the men and women of law enforcement really are good at just people trying to do what their primary objective is, which is protect public safety. And I got to tell you, having been in a similar position, when you're faced with administrative hurdles such as privacy protections, your first and foremost duty comes first, and those are sometimes sidelined. So I definitely agree that the transparency aspect is tantamount, especially looking at several of the NSA releases of late. And indeed, there are other abuses that haven't even been explored because we don't know anything about these fusion centers or their priorities or projects, active programs, et cetera. And I would just go back to my real point, which was tying this into John Poindexter's total information awareness. This is just another keystone piece in my mind of what Dan Ellsberg termed, a turnkey surveillance state. And even though we have good people with good intentions doing good jobs, that's not always the case. And the potential for abuse is there without more transparency.
Okay, John, I'm going to have to give you the last word on that. Thanks for joining us. And we've been talking about license plate readers. Our guests were Mike Senna, director of the Northern California Regional Intelligence Center, which stores some of the information, and Ali Winston, who wrote the article on license plate readers for the Center for Investigative Reporting. Thank you both for being a part of our program. And I'm Tui Vu, here today for Michael Krasny. Thank you for listening. This is Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.